Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Ballet continues its season this weekend with a triple bill titled Paint It Black, which features William Forsythe's masterpiece In the Middle, Somewhat Elevated, Alejandro Cerruto's Intimate, Extremely Close, and the work of my guest today, English choreographer Christopher Bruce, his strutting and cheeky tribute to the music of the Rolling Stones, Rooster. From the opening strutting dandy in Little Red Rooster, Bruce captures viewers' attention with a close reading of the Stones' lyrics and a series of poignant stories told through pure dance, merging classical, contemporary jazz, and street techniques. Christopher Bruce has been called the Nureyev of contemporary ballet. He was a member, a choreographer, and an artistic director of Britain's prestigious contemporary dance ensemble, the Rambert Dance Company. And he's had a long relationship with a number of prestigious companies. He's an associate choreographer still at Houston Ballet and regularly working with Netherlands Dance Theater, the English National Ballet, Scottish Ballet, and the Royal Danish Ballet, to name just a few. Tulsa Ballet presents his Rooster as a part of Paint It Black this weekend and again next weekend at the University of Tulsa's Lorton Performance Center. Christopher Bruce is my guest today. Christopher Bruce, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the origins of Rooster, because a lot of the ballets you did prior to this, that was a very strong social message. Rooster seems to be this pure exuberance and just love of the music that seems to come through for the music of the Rolling Stones.
Well, I think it was born out of my youth, basically, because I used to party to this music in the 60s and 70s with my wife. And so it's always been a part of me, and I loved it because its base was very much in the American blues.
Rhythm and blues, yeah. Traditional rhythm and blues,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it has a very strong foundation, an earthiness, and takes in serious subject matter. And I think that's part of the reason the Stones have been so successful for so long. This wonderful core that was at the base of their music. And even though they've kind of created a lot of their own music, it somehow hasn't entirely left its foundation somehow. So I love the music. I love the group. I love the fact that they were the naughty boys of rock and roll in those times, whereas other groups were rather sweeter.
Yes, sweeter and maybe a little more intellectually driven, as opposed to the Rolling Stones was talking with their loins.
Absolutely. And that's what I get the dancers to do whenever possible. But, you know, I didn't ever think of making a piece to it until years later. It was about 89 that I suddenly had this crazy idea when I was listening to the music again. I thought, you know, I think I could take some of these tracks and put them into a form that would produce a score for a dance. Of course, incredibly dangerous because they're so well known and it's so difficult not to end up with just a series of numbers. I had to find some common themes that would run through the piece so that the choreography would build and develop that I'd have a whole piece made up of eight tracks, not just eight separate tracks.
Yeah, and that's what I love about this piece. There is a structure and flow from piece to piece, and I figure you probably had to spend a lot of time crafting how you're going to put those together.
Absolutely. I spent a few months just listening to the music and sort of juxtaposing the order. And I listened very carefully to a lot of the lyrics, and they seemed quite chauvinistic. And I thought, if I start with the Little Red Rooster, this says it all, basically, that arrogant flamboyance and that analogy between the strutting cockerel with his fine feathers in the farmyard and the young man dressed up in his fineries, the dandy.
Yeah, with a thin tie, yes.
Yes, absolutely. That was the basis of it. And I made an opening dance that was based on gestures to do with preening, you know, pushing the hair back.
Straightening the tie,
dusting the suit off. And this became the sort of foundation of the choreographic language. And from there, I developed it. And what it turned into really was both a celebration of the times and the music, but also a kind of fairly light-hearted battle of the sexes, where the men had the upper hand, the dominance for part of the time, but the women would fight back. And
well, that's what I was going to say. You mentioned that the lyrics were chauvinistic, but from what I can see, the women have the upper hand most of the time in this ballet, seems to me.
Well, you talked about sort of dancing with your loins. I think the men are dancing with their loins. The women are dancing more with their brains. And sort of looking on with a sense of irony and humor.
Well, the opening of this ballet is so wonderful because you open with Little Red Rooster, and even before the music really starts, there's this strut, the rooster's head jerk that opens the piece, and you're just instantly captivated by the opening moves of that. And of course, it recalls Roosters, but it also recalls Mick Jagger, who did quite a bit of that on stage as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that kind of androgynous sort of preening nature of the way he performs, which is so him.
And that first piece really strikes me as, I don't think there's really a central story. Maybe there is a story, but it's almost like Schoolyard and school days in a way. A lot of the movements really strike me as, you know, guys in the schoolyard basically, you know, determining who's the alpha male, if you will.
Yes. They're in the farmyard. It's the sort of chickens in the farmyard to start with. We go into Lady Jane. It's almost like a kind of court scene. Because what was so wonderful about the 60s was how, to a certain extent, the social barriers broke down. And you had these pop stars beginning to earn a lot of money from humble backgrounds for the most part, but mixing with the debutantes. So Lady Jane is kind of like a court scene, a fake minuet, if you like.
Are there moves that you put that are sort of somewhat reminiscent of actual 18th and 19th century dance?
Well, it goes further back. It goes to the Baroque language.
Okay.
Certain movements. And again, I take these movements and use them as a basis to give the piece its vocabulary, its signature. And so this kind of fake minuet where I use some Baroque steps like the petit cabriole, and some of the movements I nicked from that particular genre.
But again, it's not those actual steps. It's a derivative, and it's got this modernism that's a part of it.
You have to make it your own. You have to take the quotations, and then you have to do something with them. You must make the influences your own.
And of course, the music does that as well, because
absolutely.
Lady Jane is this sort of faux harpsichord, kind of a 18th century form in the background,
yeah,
in this very contemporary song.
But, you know, Lady Jane is quite a gentle number in a way. So I go from the kind of quite hard-hitting, loud opening to Lady Jane, which takes you down dramatically, where it's all insinuation and sort of all whispering at the court, as it were. And then I'd take you into Not Fade Away, Buddy Holly number, and I play that very loud. And we just bop. And it's about a guy that just loves the dance. It's like his partner just winds him up and off he goes, you know. And then again, I'll take it down for As Tears Go By. So it becomes gentler. But you mentioned the schoolyard. That is like a playground.
Yes, I was schoolyard exile was the words I wrote down for it, because it's like there's a man and there's a woman and he's not in the cliques.
Absolutely. And it's kind of the new boy on the block, sort of just watching the politics of the school ground, the way even at a very young age there is that attraction and antagonism between the boys and the girls. Like already at a very young age, I know with my grandchildren, you can see if a sort of a young man comes in to the house, suddenly they start flirting. It's extraordinary. This is happening at 4, 5, 6 years old. So there's that flirtation. But as a man, I remember, you know, being attracted to the pretty girls, but at the same time not wanting to appear to be soppy because your friends would chide you. So you think, oh, I'm a tough guy. I'm not into girls, you know. You know, we just mistreat them. You know, they're stupid. But at the same time, that's going on. So there's a contradiction there. And I've tried to bring that into it, that sort of show the fact that this sort of battle of the sexes is happening from a very young age. Then we go on to Paint It Black, where the lyrics are about a guy who's lost his love, is brokenhearted, he's pathetic, you know, really fallen apart. And everywhere he looks, he just keeps seeing beautiful women in short skirts, you know, so it's like it's being flaunted at him. So there's a little bit of Greek mythology here with the sirens tempting him, teasing him, and giving him a hard time, you know. And then after that, into Ruby Tuesday, which is my, I will say that's my Mad Giselle solo.
Yeah, it is. It is a wonderful piece because we've seen the dancer form so well, and then you have this sort of mid-length long dress, it's sort of Martha Graham-ish looking, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful showcase for a female dancer.
Quite a lyrical dancer for the woman, but it's like she's kind of remembering another time. She's a little crazy and in her own world, and the men that join her are just humoring her, basically dancing with her but sending her up.
And again, it's tied to the lyrics. Every one of these dances, I think, are a lot of times they're your interpretation of what the lyrics mean. But of course, that's what, you know, those lyrics of those days were a lot of time, but it seems to be very tied to the lyrics.
It is, but I hope, hopefully not in a banal way. I have to make it my way of interpreting them and letting the choreography tell the story and not resorting to gesture and pantomime. There are elements of all those theatrical devices, if you like. You know, I'll borrow from anywhere. There's lots of classical dance technique in this piece, but the foundation of it is in contemporary dance, is in the Martha Graham technique that I learned when I was, you know, still a teenager, and that has stayed with me all my career as a choreographer, which makes it quite difficult for ballet dancers to deal with, because you have to get them working off-center, falling into their weight, using the plié, going into the ground, and working laterally, and not being afraid to fall into things rather than stepping into things on their balance.
Yeah. How difficult is that, to fall into it rather than to step into it? Because there's a lot of points in this ballet where you're saying the dancer is just on the verge of of losing it.
Well, I love to see choreography that phrases in an unexpected way. So therefore, if you hold the balance till you're falling, and as you fall, you're almost late. So you then syncopate what happens next to get you back on the music. So you're playing with the phrasing in the same way that maybe that Billie Holiday, when she was singing, did. You know, she just didn't stay regularly on the beat.
She moved ahead. She moved back. Yeah.
She would sort of almost leave it too late. And so phrasing is very important. Musicality is important, but how you phrase the music and what you do with it and the unexpected nature of the syncopation.
When I think of dancers learning things, it's 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, you know, and you're going through these counts. Are you syncopating your counts as you're learning it, or is it, do you really say, no, you got to be free with this? The beat stays the same, but you're going to move ahead, you're going to move behind.
For the most part, it's absolutely accurately set on the beat, but the way you can pull, you know, the 5, 6, 7, 8, and 1, 2. You know, you can sort of suspend the music, the movement to the music, so that it's not entirely predictable. In the slower sections, there are other phrases of movement that are quite elastic, where you can play with the timing. I always say to the dancer in the solo, as long as you remain musical, you don't have to dance it exactly in the same way as your predecessor. You can make it your own, so that, you know, some people will hold a position a little bit longer. They will phrase the next phrase of movement on maybe a beat later and catch up later. Mm-hmm. So there are different ways of being musical. So I do allow a little bit of freedom in some of the solos, but for the most part, the groups are absolutely set on the beat.
My guest today is Christopher Bruce. He's the former artistic director of the Rambert Dance Company, a freelance choreographer today. He's choreographed many, many important pieces, including Rooster, which will be a part of Paint It Black. Tulsa Ballet presents that this weekend as a part of a triple bill at the Lorton Performing Center at the University of Tulsa. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. As we talk about some of the pieces, I wanted to talk a little bit about Not Fade Away. You said this was a boy solo, but for some reason, I don't know why I got this, but the Jerome Robbins school dance scene from West Side Story sort of came to mind as I was watching that. And there's nothing very similar about it, but there's just sort of that vision came to me. Was that an inspiration in any way?
Well, Robbins is a great inspiration for me. He's like a mentor, because I just admired the fact that he could move freely between classical ballet, contemporary dance pieces, and musical theater. He did everything brilliantly. And this kind of versatility is what I really believe in. And I take my influences, my dance influences, from all my contemporary dance training, from my ballet training, and also from the musical theater, the great movies we've seen from way back in the 30s with The Stair, Ginger Rogers. All of this feeds into my language, and I'll take from whatever I need. The Commedia dell'arte, that tradition, mm-hmm. is very important to me. So Robbins is a very important influence.
What I really love about the ballet is you'll see these very much out of the balletic tradition with this modern and ballet sort of juxtaposed, but yet there will be all these sort of vernacular movements that you were talking about earlier, the brushing of the collar, the straightening of the tie, but there'll be even littler things. It's sort of like, I think even in Lady Jane, there's a moment where they're putting their pinkies out, if you will, and all of a sudden here comes this tongue out of the paint. Is that now? Is that a piece of business, or is that part of the
part of the choreography?
It's like
a snake. You know, yeah. the guy is like he's the cockerel. There's the preening cockerel. He's like a wolf. He's like a snake. You know, I love to work with those animal images, which is what Graham did. Martha Graham, you know, used animals when trying to explain a quality of movement, you know, a cat-like quality of the way those dancers moved in the Graham Company. Extraordinary. And so animal imagery is very important. We are animals after all.
Yeah. Well, of course, the ballet ends with Sympathy for the Devil, a great piece, and which is, I always think of, I don't know how old that is. Is that a little bit younger than the rest of the pieces? Because a lot of these are very early Stones.
60s, 70s. It's, A lot of people have recorded that song. It's a great song if you listen to the lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, it's the devil.
It's a story of the whole history of the devil.
Yes, it's how he's screwing up the whole world. It's behind everything bad that happens, you know. So it's kind of, again, it's your naughty Mick Jagger figure. It's your naughty man. And it's a great finale because it just builds wonderfully.
Because you see all these archetypes come back. You know, the strutting rooster in the last two pieces all of a sudden makes a reappearance.
Yes. I mean, you know, it develops into a very busy dance, but for the last sort of 2 minutes, I create a coda where I bring back fragments of the previous movements. So we tie up all the loose ends, we bring it back, we resolve the piece. Because I think it's always important for me to feel that I have rounded off and made it a complete piece, that it's been developed and it has resolved. I think it's one of the most difficult things when you're making a piece of dance is just not to go on and get nowhere and finish. You know, you've got to get somewhere, finish whatever you have to say. And when I say that, I don't mean that you have to say something literally, you know, but somehow you've got to feel that what I've had to say and do has been said and done. And so the form and structure is very important to me.
And when you do that, when you bring everything back again, it almost becomes like a bowels piece, and you don't want to do that either. You know, sort of a, you know, here we are. This is the end of the piece, and we're kind of doing our bowels while we're still performing.
Almost, yeah, not quite.
Do you want that to happen, or do you not want that to happen?
No, I just want the audience to sort of
be reminded of what they've seen.
Bring it full
again,
circle.
Again, it's resolving.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it is circular in its form that we end back with the Rooster Man again with one of the signature gestures.
My guest today is one of the great British choreographers, Christopher Bruce. His Rooster will be a part of Tulsa Ballet's triple bill this weekend and again next weekend at the Lorton Performance Center at the University of Tulsa, Paint It Black, which is one of the numbers he choreographs. His ballet is titled Rooster, based, I assume it has to do with that preening character, the cockerel, as you said,
yeah.
that shows up. And, of course, the Little Red Rooster is the first number that you do. Earlier you said you spent about a couple of years with these songs, and I was hearing an interview when you did the Commedia dell'arte piece for Houston, I believe.
Hush.
Yeah, Hush, which was Yo-Yo Ma and Bobby McFerrin music. And you said, I spent a couple of years listening to that.
Absolutely.
Now, is that the sort of the incubation period
for a
piece?
Very often, yes. I mean, I think 2 years is about the usual period of time. I think with Ghost Dancers, it was about 2 years exactly. Because I often, you know, I hear a piece of music. I'm listening to music all the time, often wonderful music, but it doesn't always trigger movement, ideas, or imagery. Imagery is very important to me. You know, I hear a piece, I think there's a dance in there somewhere, but I can't always see where it is or feel where it is, and then it'll come to me. You know, the last piece I made was a piece for the Olympics in 2012, and I married it up with the Queen's Jubilee celebrations, and I had the ideas in my head, and I could not find a score. And one day I was doing the washing up. My wife is a wonderful cook, and so she mainly does the cooking, but I always wash up because she's hopeless at washing up. And so I was doing the washing up, and on Radio 3, BBC Radio 3, on comes this piece of music that everyone's choreographed to Ravel's Bolero. And instantly I knew that would work with the crazy ideas that I had. And it can happen like that, unexpectedly, out of the blue. You know, you sometimes have the idea before you have the music. And then you keep somersaulting. You know, the movement will somersault the music, and then the music will, again, take you forward. And that's a wonderful way of collaborating with the score.
Now, was there any qualms about using Bolero? Because so many other choreographers have used this over the years and there's so much language out there. Or was it a matter of you had these movements in mind, you go, ah, that's the perfect...
Well, until I had these ideas, I never dreamt I would use it because everyone else seemed to have done a piece to it. And so,
what can you say that's new?
Yeah, absolutely. But then again, I heard the music and the ideas of athletes, dancers warming up them. Just in the way it builds is like building up to a performance, whether an athletic performance or a performance on stage, you know, that tension, that warming up, that nervous energy.
So I assume the performance, the athletic performance, happened in the very last couple of moments of the ballet?
Well, no, there was quite a lot of athleticism before.
Yeah.
But then I didn't end with Bolero. It finished with a wonderful climax, as the music does. There was always very generous applause at that moment. And then I get the dancers just to look out front like they haven't really noticed. And then I add another number. So there's a kind of, I used it as a false finale, and then I add a 2.5 minute number at the end to make a second finale, again to find a resolution and bring the piece back to the early images in this particular piece called Dream that go back to 1953, the Queen's coronation celebrations in the street where my aunts and uncles and Mum and Dad were doing egg and spoon races and sack races. And I do all that in the beginning. So it starts in a very naive way and builds till these mums, dads, aunts and uncles are sort of stripping off and they become the athletes. Mm. Anyway, I've told you the idea. Someone will pinch it down. But I did it first. So again, I use the music to bring it back from out of the stadium back into the street.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about the imagery of Rooster. Was there an image that sort of popped in your head at the beginning? Was it the schoolyard, or was there something else?
It was the dandy figures of Carnaby Street.
Now, where's Carnaby Street?
It's not so famous now. It's famous historically, but that was the where Bieber, the original Bieber, I think, was it? Or was that South Kent? It was where a lot of the clothes shops for the late 60s, early 70s stuff that we used to wear. That's where people
The fashion center.
The fashion place where we shopped, if you could afford to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, we wore outrageously silly things like the flared trousers, velvet suits, colored ties, and caftans, and short skirts. I didn't wear a short skirt, but the girls did. My wife did.
So that was the image,
and it was.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Then, yeah, you know, with the Stones.
Very much born out of my teenage years, really.
Yeah. Now, are you working on choreography, or what are you listening to incessantly now to get those images in mind, or are you not?
A new piece, Avopart, Fratres, that I'm making for Phoenix in England. It's a short piece, but I'm putting it with another piece called Shift, an existing piece, and they're going to do that later in the year, but I start work on it. I think I start on that in June. But before that, I'm setting a piece called 10 Poems for Scottish Ballet, which has no music. It just has some wonderful, wonderful poetry by Dylan Thomas, and it's spoken by Richard Burton. Oh. That's a wonderful voice. I chose 10 poems from a 1953 recording, and I made it in 2009 for a company in Germany. And this is the first time I've restaged it, and I'm doing it for Scottish Ballet in September. So I start work on that in March, April.
All right. Well, Christopher Bruce, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Choreographer Christopher Bruce speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa about his ballet Rooster, a tribute to the music of the Rolling Stones, which Tulsa Ballet will present as a part of a triple bill titled Paint It Black this weekend and next at the Lorton Performing Arts Center on the campus of the University of Tulsa. Information at tulsaballet.org. By the way, the ballet announced its upcoming season earlier this week, which will include Oklahoma and world premieres, along with Carmina Burana, The Sleeping Beauty, The Three Musketeers, and a special program, 20, which commemorates Marcello Angelini's 20th year as the artistic director of Tulsa Ballet. Again, more information at tulsaballet.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today, a program produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth.